You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast, the only podcast out there with the cardio for those deep water championship rounds, and we certainly needed those championship rounds this weekend. I am Mags, and with me today, as always, my son, Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
Oh, I'm not too bad.
Yep, so we have just, I watched it live, but Carlos here fell fast asleep during the whole of the main card, so he's caught up today.
Hey, I've got a 7 month old baby.
But yeah, we've just come hot off the presses of watching a UFC 247, headlined obviously by Dominic Reyes, challenging for the lightweight title from the GOAT, John Bones Jones. So I'll just quickly run through the prelims and the early prelims. We started the card with Austin Lingo taking on Yusuf Zalai. Austin Lingo picking up the decision. We got Andre Ewell picking up the decision against Jonathan Martinez in a fight that it basically that set the marker for judges maybe making some kind of out there claims. One judge gave like a 30-27 to Ewell, and it was clearly not. It was definitely a lot closer than that. Then we had Domingo Pilate beating Jermaine Newson with a first round KO, 38 seconds KO there. Going into the prelims, we then had Miles Johns taking the second round KO against Mario Bautista. Alex Morono taking the first round KO against Chaos Williams taking the first round KO against Alex Morono, the guy who looks a bit like a young Joe Lauzon. Again, 27 seconds then for that knockout. Going into the women's flyweight division, we have Lauren Murphy picking up the decision against Andrea Lee. And then in the feature prelims, and to be fair, I want to give props to James Krause for taking this fight. He took this fight on about 20 hours notice. That's gangster for me. That's absolute gangster. Unfortunately, he did end up losing. He lost a bad decision. But for someone who had no training camp at all to even be still in, basically in that fight at the end, well played, James Krause. And that guy is an absolute rock star.
Well, he is. I saw that on Twitter last night. He offered to step in for the fight, and that just goes to show what professionals are like. That doesn't matter your game plan or out, you haven't been training for this guy. It's just you've been a professional and you've kept to the same weight that you're supposed to, and you're ready to step in at any time. That's what the UFC are looking for, and that's what's going to get you fights.
Absolutely.
In them big top spots.
Mm-hmm. So going into this main card, and Carlos, pre-recording, made a bit of a comment to me about how kind of a letdown the card was. And to be fair, at least in the first two fights, I totally agree with him. We kicked off with Ilia Latifi stepping up from light heavyweight to face Derek Lewis. Obviously, we all know Derek Lewis has got that knockout power for days. And for me, this was a bad move for Latifi because he wasn't exactly a powerhouse at light heavyweight. He kind of has got a glass jaw. So for me, him stepping up to heavyweight was a bit of a wrong move. And to be fair, it kind of proved it in this fight. There's not a lot of big talking points in this fight because it was literally three rounds of very slow action from Lewis and a lot of kind of wrestle fucking from Ilia Latifi. And when Latifi did end up having like some success in getting to the ground, he did absolutely nothing with it. It was literally just laying on top of Derek Lewis. For me, it was a clear victory for Derek Lewis. I kind of maybe gave Latifi the second round just because he had more success with the wrestling, even though he didn't really do a lot with it. But what impressed me most in this fight was, one, Lewis's cardio was a lot better. I mean, he's still fairly gassed in that third round, but you can tell he's working on his cardio. And two, this motherfucker can learn how to throw a flying knee. That scared the shit out of me because You think of a beast like Derek Lewis throwing like haymakers and bombs. Now he can throw kicks and knees. That is frightening. So, yeah, it was a good victory for Derek Lewis. I don't know kind of where it puts him in the division because, like I said, Latifi is not necessarily a heavyweight. He looked very small in this fight anyway. But, yeah, Derek Lewis picked up the decision. Carlos, what were your views on that fight?
I've got to give it to Derek Lewis. I understand his, coming from a fighter's standpoint, I understand his frustration. How Latifi were, you're right, he were doing nothing. He respected the power of what Lewis had and didn't want to get in one of a war with him. And the only way to not do that and still win the fight is to do what he were doing. Now, I were pissed off with the way the fight went, but then it came to the decision and Derek Lewis lost that fight, and A's for why. Yeah, he pushed more. He did more in the action when it was breaking. He threw more. He got like more of the shots off, more of the heavier shots that people actually were like, ooh. But when you're actually talking into like a fight point of view and you're scoring that, Latifi actually he were even though he weren't doing much, he was still controlling him. He still had him pinned up against the cage every time that he went in. It were a boring tactic, or a very boring tactic. But in my eyes, he won the fight. Now, you're on about where these two go next, especially for Derek Lewis. Latifi, like I said to you, I got pissed off in that bout. I straight away, what I said to you, for me, if I were at UFC, I'd be fucking cutting him for the way he fought, especially on a card that was so like packed, but not in a way. But then like Derek Lewis, he, like you were on about, like, I feel sorry for him that he don't really go nowhere from this. He's shown a couple of things. One, he's working on a couple of things in his arsenal. He's like I say, that flying fucking double knee that he flew. Like, I don't think he's ever threw that before.
Yeah, I mentioned it like whilst watching the fight to Five Rounds regular and good friend Pup. It kind of reminded me of someone who they've started playing Mortal Kombat and they've learnt a move, so they just keep doing it because he threw that flying knee about 10 times.
Well, that's it. And then like you were saying, that flying knee, it takes a lot out of you, especially when you're a big guy. Now look at him, and now I know people might shit on him and say, oh well, it were a three round and not a five round. Fuck it, but you're a heavyweight throwing fucking double flying knees. It's funny, it takes a lot out of you. So he has worked on his cardio, and you can see that. But he didn't do enough in that fight to say, yeah, I want to get back in talks with Ngannou, Stipe and DC and stuff like that. He's, like I say, I don't think he goes past rank 6. I don't think he moves up a rank for that. I think he stays exactly where he is, which is a bit of a bummer for him. But no one can not say that he didn't try and finish the fight, because when, like I say, when he weren't getting fucking wrestle fucked off Latifi, he was trying to actually exchange with him. But going towards Latifi, his game plan, it were working for him. You could tell. The only problem is he tried to copy Khabib, but he didn't know how to mix the grounding pound in with it. Cause if you've seen him, he were holding him down and doing all the right stuff to keep him pinned down. And even when he were in side control, for instance, he weren't posturing up and getting some shots off. And Derek Lewis weren't holding him down. Like, he made it look like to some people that he were holding down, like with his forearm on his head and grabbing his arm and stuff like that. But the grabbing the arm is more just so he don't crack the inside of the head whilst he's led on you. But he could have easily postured up at any time and let some shots off, but he just didn't. He kept his head on Derek Lewis's chest to keep him down onto the ground because he respects his power, because he knows, shit, I haven't fought many people who are stronger than me or who have got a better knockout power than me. So he just, if he would have let a more offense off on that whilst he were on the ground and in the clinch, that would have been a better fight in my eyes, but shit happens.
Yeah, and then going into the next fight, and it was again kind of the same, a fight that on paper should have been a lot better than it ended up being. We had Mirsad Bektik taking on Dan Agha. These two guys looked like they could have been twins. They were that similar, quite similar styles in fighting as well. I thought that Bektik probably has the better skill set, but obviously being part British, I've got a big soft spot for Dan Agger. Going into the fight, I felt that Agger easily controlled that first round. Bektik just didn't seem to have an answer for any of Dan Agger's offense, apart from being able to stuff his takedowns, which was kind of like the saving grace. I think if Agger would have been able to get the takedowns, it could have been a 10-8 round rather than a 10-9 for me. But yeah, on the feet, Agger was great with the body shots, great with the leg kicks. It was kind of like Bektik looked like a deer trapped in the headlights, and he kind of didn't know how to work with and kind of like defend and set off his own offense in that first round. Coming out into the second, I felt that Bektik was a lot better. He ended up getting some takedowns himself and did really well on side control. There was a point where he had Agger in like a triangle like choke, and Agger said after the fact that he didn't feel like he was in an uncomfortable position. But from my point of view, it looked like he was really, really struggling there.
Well, in that position where I can say a lot of people like to do where he was stuck in that arm triangle, and a lot of fighters like to go to side control in there. But a lot of fighters that we've seen lately, they'll stay in the mount position because you can still get that off with enough pressure.
Yeah.
You can still get that off, but you'll see with the elbow and the shoulder, there's a gap where you can still see the neck.
And you could see that Agger was able to move his neck quite freely, so that kind of shows that it wasn't synced in super, super tight.
Well,
it was definitely uncomfortable.
It all differs on like your neck build and the way you're built and your opponent's built. Like you say, who's that guy in heavyweight division? I forget his name. He fucking pulls it off all the time. He loves the choke. He's even done it from whilst people have had him in. Like,
is it?
Isn't
that Ivan? I know you're on about it.
It's not for sport. Fought a couple of weeks ago.
Is it not Volkov?
Volkov? No, he's not. He's not like everybody.
Right, no, anyway. Alexander Volkov.
Is it?
The one who beat Greg Hardy.
Yeah. Him. The way them sort of guys are built, they're more tighter in. They can get all that squeezing, like pressure off, whilst not having to move the body, but. If Bektik were able to just shift over to the side now, that would have been a different scenario.
Oh, yeah,
obviously,
Agger
wouldn't have been as comfortable as he were in that position.
Yeah, so going into that third, you could easily say that it was one apiece. So this third round really did matter. And for me, I think this is again where we're having issues with maybe the judges. I felt that Bektik was the stronger fighter in this third round. Agger did have some good shots, but Bektik kind of pressed the pace. It was pushing Agger towards the fence. He got the takedowns that he needed, and he also got off a lot more shots. So for me, I felt that Bektik took this fight, but unfortunately for Bektik, it was Dan Agger who got the split decision. It's a kind of fight that on another day, it could have gone absolutely either way, and it's one that you'd kind of want to see run back, I think.
That's it, definitely. I've got to agree with you to disagree with you in a way, because it's like, I think Agger did do enough to win the fight. Like, obviously, going into this, Bektik did come into the fight as a favourite, but that were shocking to me. Obviously, his last loss before this one were a stoppage. He got cleaned out, and then Argo's now on a five-fight win streak. But when Bektik was able to actually take it to the ground, because when they were stood up, like you say, he just didn't have no answers. Like,
At least, certainly in that first round. The first round, it was clear that Agger was the better on the ground, on the feet, and it was, like I said, it was the fact that Bektik stuffed the takedowns that kept him in that round.
Oh, definitely. But Bektik, as soon as he got it to the ground, like you say, these guys are that well matched. On the feet, we've seen Agger took that, so Bektik had to change the game plan. Mm-hmm. Realise that as a professional, shit, this guy's better than me on the feet. I still need to win this fight. How do I do it? Take it to the ground. Only problem is, like you were saying, these two guys are so well matched that both of the ground game were just, both of them were like, I won't say better than each other, but they equal each other out for how good they were. It's like you were saying, like Argo, when he was saying he weren't panicked by what the position he were in. Because most majority of the time, Pettit were doing the right things, holding him down, trying to move positions, but Argo knew how to counter them, and he knew how to just hold on and stay safe in a way. He knew how to not get into any sort of position where he's letting anything loose, he's letting any arms go, he's letting Pettit take his neck or all like that. And just providing his time for either the ref to stand him up or for either to get just a little opening where he can shoot and get back up to the feet. But then Pettit, he were good at not leaving them openings, keeping it to the ground. So like you're saying, on the feet, if it stayed on the feet, Argo would have took it all day long. It's just he had to work a little bit more to show the judges, like, yeah, he might look like he's in a better position because he's on top, but it's like the Latifi fight. He looked in a better position because he were on top, but Derek Lewis were doing more in that fight. Just because you're on top doesn't always mean that you're winning that fight. Like when someone's got you in rubber guard, yeah, you're on top, but that person who's got you in rubber guard is in control because you can't fucking move. Yeah. So it's like I say, it's just Argo for me won that fight, but Pettit can't take. Pettit can't really, even though he lost the fight, as a moral victory, you can sort of say he won the fight in a way, because on the feet, yeah, he knew he was losing, but he got better. Like you're saying, in the first round, he knew, like, shit, he's faster than me, he's on point. In the second and third, he sort of learnt from his mistakes, but he was a good fighter. That was a moral victory for him.
Yep, so next we go back to the heavyweights and we go back to another big, beefy Houston hometown boy in Juan Adams. Quite surprised this was so high up the card, knowing that Adams was coming in with a record of one win and two losses. But obviously, it being Houston, and he did get a big reception. And for me, this was actually a shock of the night.
Bones a training partner, isn't he? Like one of Jackson boys.
Yeah, there, so. It starts off and I just can't get my head around Juan Adams' his kind of fighting stance. He almost fights like someone who's drunk.
Shit, nose and bones.
Yeah, it's just he's such a tall guy anyway, but he puts his arms up above his own head, which leaves a big, massive target for anyone who wants to take shots at him. And he's got a very kind of clumsy way of like moving. Anyway, so we got into the fight. Adam starts with the heavy strikes because that's what he's known for. Taffer kind of was keeping him at bay with like a few little leg kicks, but he kind of like started swelling up Adam's knees with these leg kicks. Did really, really well. But then Adams took an uppercut. And it was basically over in, what, less than 2 minutes, I think it was. The uppercut leads to a knockdown. Taffer comes up with a few follows, and that's the fight over. And like I said, it was a big, big shot because nobody gave Taffer a chance in this fight. Everyone thought this was kind of like the one, I mean, on a card full of fighters who were like way over like the odds, this was one of the kind of the bankers. And Justin Taffer picks up a very, very good first victory. I think that was his second UFC fight. I think he lost on his debut. So that kind of cancels that out. And, yeah, good victory for him. What else is there to add, Carlos?
See, this is the only fight. Like I said, there's nothing really to add to that fight. You've hit it just like Taffer hit Adams on the chin. The only thing I can add to this fight is I put a little bet on last night, and every single fight on this card, I got right bar from this one. Every guy I picked, I got bar from this one. Yeah. And the only reason I didn't is because I didn't really know that much about Taffer. Like I say, his record is only very sad. I think he's only had like five professional fights. Like I say, his first fight in the UFC, he lost. And when I first saw him, I thought, like, oh shit, here we go. Like, fucking, like a sort of like looking for a new Mark Hunt. Mark Hunt's gone. And when he lost his fight, I thought, well, that's his career in UFC a bit done. But when he got put up against Adams, I thought, well, he's one of Bones' guys fighting on the same card.
It's a gimme.
That's exactly what I thought. So I didn't even look at Taffer twice, to be honest. I just picked Adams, and he fucking let me down. Everybody else did all right, just him, the fucking knob. That is an all right fight. It's a good. he needs to learn, definitely. He's got a lot of stuff to learn. Like you say, don't put them hands above your head. Keep, you're a, in the light heavyweight division and other divisions, yeah, you might be able to sort of get away with that, keeping them at bay, but you've got to be fast because your opponents are fast. But in that heavyweight division, you've got to be tucked in most majority of the time. Because
and especially when you're going to be taller than the majority of your opponents. It just made no sense to me that if he's putting his hands above his own head, they're way above the head of his opponent. So he's leaving a huge like body target for his opponent to take on. And he's just a weird stance. I mean, if he were 5'10", you could kind of understand it.
Yeah.
He's like 6'7".
No, that's it. It's his opponents in that division, it's not like he's fighting lightweights, he's fighting heavyweights. And yeah. It only takes one shot for a heavyweight, either it's body or a bit chin. And yeah, you're down, you're hurt. So he has got a lot of stuff to work on. But you got to give it to Taffer. He took this fight. He's like, even though he probably in his head thought, well, they're sort of like offering me up as like a sacrificial lamb, he's gone in there and he's put a little bit of an upset on and knocked him out. But from this, he's just knocked out potentially, because they were looking at Adams like, oh, this could be a contender in the future, weren't they? Yeah. So he's, in my eyes, he's just, Taffer's just took his spot.
If you've got a 3-1 record and you're getting beat by, no disrespect to Taffer, but you're getting beat by the likes of Taffer, you've not got much of a future in the UFC.
Well, that's it.
So then going into the co-main event and the biggest like outbalanced fight on the whole card. I mean, Valentina Shevchenko was going in at like 12-1 on. Nobody gave Catelyn a chance. And to be fair, she didn't deserve a chance, really. It went down exactly how we would have thought it would go. If you were to design a mixed martial artist in a laboratory, it's exactly how Valentina Shevchenko comes out. She's so good at what she does.
Especially
at
women's flyweight division.
Yeah, she's just head and shoulders above everyone else. And for Chookagan to be like the number one contender, Valentina just showed how much more class she's got in mixed martial arts than all the rest of the division. The first and second rounds pretty much went exactly the same. Chookagan with her longer limbs just didn't seem to be able to find her range, where Valentina Shevchenko found her range almost straight away. Those leg kicks are absolutely brutal, and I think that that double punch and low leg kick combination she's got is one of the best things you can see in mixed martial arts. She just lands it so sweetly. She was throwing spinning back fists. She was in the second round, she landed a spinning wheel kick. Oh my god, it broke my jaw. It hit that hard. She basically dominated on the feet for the first 4 minutes of each round, and then in the last minute or so, she took it to the ground. And Joe Rogan said something really interesting that I'd never noticed before, and I was watching afterwards, and it is true. She doesn't put her hands on the mat. She keeps her hands on her opponents at all times, not giving the opponents time to like basically unbalance her or get hold of a limb. And it's a very, very smart way of fighting, and it shows why she's so dominant. It's these little things that she does and the little things that she learns that keeps her head and shoulders above the fighters in her division. Then we get to the end of the first round, and Shevchenko lays a little short kind of like bone style elbow, and it absolutely split Chukagan's eye wide open. They went to the corners, and the cornerman just could not stop it bleeding. It was absolutely brutal. Got into the second round, pretty much more of the same. It was all Shevchenko landing those combos, and Chukagan trying to land her offense, but just not being able to. Shevchenko with that, like I said, that wheel kick, and then I think she threw an axe kick almost straight away, yeah, which hit Chookagan in the arm. Again, dragged Chookagan to the ground for the last minute or so. She almost got like a really good body triangle from the bottom, did Chookagan. But one thing that really was confused me and frustrating me with Chookagan was She would pull her legs up to almost like combat the way Shevchenko was fighting on the ground, but she'd let it go and she wouldn't commit to the defense, and that was what was keeping her on the ground, because it's all well and good having the body triangle, but you're not controlling your opponent, and it only takes that opponent to be able to posture up and you're getting ground and pounded. But she was trying to defend, and then she just kept stopping and trying to defend and stopping, and she just would not commit. Got into the third round, and she again, the actual downfall for her was the pretty much the same. She tried
to
pull guard. She but she wouldn't commit to it again, and she ended up going down and it was over. Shevchenko just pounded her. The ref knew that Chukin couldn't get out of the position, and basically to save her face from being smashed in, he called the fight. And for me, Valentina Shevchenko just being as dominant as we knew she was going to be.
That's it. See, this fight, this full card, it seems like I'm nitpicking it, and I'm not. I did enjoy it, but this fight pissed me off. Like, Valentina Shevchenko fully deserved the win. She did everything correctly. Only problem is, Kaplan, they pushed a jiu-jitsu so much that it's like, oh, she's like brown belt or whatever, blue belt or some shit, and she's this good, and she's actually got a chance on the ground. And I already sort of knew myself that, like, you can push it and sugarcoat it as much as you want, she ain't got a fucking chance against Shevchenko. Mm-hmm. But when they actually got in there, I saw a video of Caitlin throwing them roundhouse kicks left and right. And I just thought to myself that either she's doing them fucking slow on purpose, or her coaches aren't picking that up. Because if she throws them at Shevchenko, Shevchenko's going to do something about that. And Shevchenko did do something about that, but in a way that put me off. I thought she's going to use that. Shevchenko's going to capitalise it and fucking knock her out with it. And if you've seen it in the second round, when she were throwing them roundhouse kicks, they were, and in the first, they were coming so slow that Shevchenko were using them just to get a distance. She weren't using them as I thought, where she'd throw them and then she'd get an offense off and a kick of her own, because she's that fast, Shevchenko. If you move that slow, she's going to use that for something. Mm-hmm. Yep. And we saw last night that she not only can use that slow movement of her opponent in a position where she can get her counter attacks off, but now she's shown us something new, where if you do move that slow and do all this stuff, she's going to read that and go, right, I know my foot needs to be there next time you do that, because when you do that, I know I can come back with my own. So and once she's got that, throughout the full five rounds, don't matter if it's that same round or the second round or two rounds down the line, she's going to know exactly where to put that foot, just because you've done that, just because she's that good of a fighter that she knows. Once she's learnt something that you've made a mistake, she's going to make you pay for that every single time. She's she's not one of these fighters, like exactly like Bones, when he knows your knee's injured, he's fucking throwing that oblique kick at you. He's not letting you up. He knows it's injured. He's that elite fighter where he's going to attack. And that's Shevchenko. Once she learns something, she ain't gonna fuck it up. She knows exactly where she needs to be, what she needs to do, and how she needs to do it. But Caitlin, when they were on the ground, because on stand up, even though she was looking like she was getting offense off, she weren't hitting Shevchenko. Shevchenko were that fast. Even when Caitlin were hitting her, Shevchenko were allowing it, because she knew that Caitlin were the longer opponent, she had the reach on her, she needed her to come in for her to get the punches off. And when you seen it, when Caitlin got that one jab off, Shevchenko were getting them fucking free strike combos off fast as fuck, because she knew that she's not, if she goes in all the time, she's going to be the one getting caught with them. Because Caitlin, even though she looked like a crap fighter against Shevchenko, she is a well-rounded fighter. Just her opponent was Shevchenko last night, which that's the problem with a lot of elite fighters. If you're a good fighter and you get put up against an elite fighter, you look average. You don't look good anymore, you just look average.
Exactly.
But when they were on the ground and Shevchenko were putting her arms on the chest, I liked Joe Rogan's commentating how he basically said, like, look at how Shevchenko doesn't put her hands on the ground. And I thought to myself, like, fair enough, you're commentating on it, but why? You don't need to say everything. Because in them positions, yeah, it's good. Keep your hands on your opponent, keep them down. I understand fully why she did it, but the moment she puts her head up, right, like that, especially against someone like Caitlin, she was proper flexible. She had the well round, like you were saying, she was trying to get that rubber guard off, she just weren't hooking her ankle to keep it there. If she, Shevchenko, lifted it up, she already had her hands on the chest. Against someone who's well rounded at Brazilian Jiu Jitsu, they're going to snap that armbar up straight away. If you leave your arm on someone's chest instead of at the side of their, like underneath their armpit, they've already got a grip of your arm. So that was one thing about Joe Rogan that I thought to myself, like, maybe he's just, the next fight, I wonder if your next opponent, if they've picked up on that, maybe they are going to attack that, let Shevchenko take you down, because they know that she keeps her arms there. The moment she pops up, they're going to attack for that armbar.
Yeah.
But then again, the Caitlin, they pushed her jiu-jitsu so much. When she pulled guard, I didn't commit to it, and Shevchenko just pulled her down and put her at crucifix straight away. We're like, this, who the fuck give her a brown or blue belt? She's, how do you not commit to? It's like she was already halfway there, going to pull guard, and then she just fucking let go. Yeah. And Shevchenko took her down straight away. Again, Shevchenko's going to capitalise on them mistakes that you do, and she's going to make you pay for them. And that was Shevchenko saw there and then, buzzing, I could finish this fight. And she finished the fight, she went for it.
Within, what, 20 seconds?
Exactly, and that was Caitlin's problem. I think she got overconfident with how much they were pushing her ground game when, yeah, it might be good in the gym. Not against Shevchenko.
No, exactly. So then we go into the main event, the fight that we've all been waiting for, and I'm sure we'll have disagreements about this. Me and Carlos have not discussed this at all before recording because I kind of wanted to get his fresh take on it. A lot of action to dissect. I'm going to kind of keep it kind of succinct and go over more the points like as a back and forth between me and Carlos, really. But first round, I gave to Reyes. I felt that it's kind of becoming a typical thing with Bones fights that he loses at least the first round, a lot of the times the second round as well. Whether that's part of his game plan, I don't know. Whether it's that's the him kind of like letting his opponent gas or letting his opponent expend a lot of energy. I don't know what his game plan is with it, but Reyes was handily beating Bones in that first round. He was crisper with his attacks. Bones did go for, like Carlos said, he went for the knees a lot, which is a very, very common thing with Bones, especially with them oblique kicks. And he also picked up a couple of warnings for the outstretched fingers, which I'm actually going further into the fight. When he got pulled again, I think he got three warnings altogether. I'm actually surprised he didn't get a doctor point for that, because I know that Merglotta kind of clamps down on that. But yeah, it was the first round, it was definitely, for me, a Reyes victory. Second round, again, I think that Reyes kind of took it. If you were to go off Twitter, and sometimes sometimes MMA Twitter is good because you can get a lot of different viewpoints and you can kind of see stuff that you ordinarily miss, but you also get a lot of casuals who kind of don't know that MMA is not boxing, and everyone was screaming, Reyes won on significant strikes in four of the rounds. Yeah, but that's only one facet of the judging for me. Going through the rest of the fight, it ended up being a Bones victory a unanimous one, which is surprising for me. I agree with the victory. I don't know if Carlos does. I'm sure he probably doesn't by the look of his face. I gave the round exactly as two of the judges gave it, 48-47 Bones. I gave Reyes the first two rounds because I felt that his offense was a lot crisper. I gave Bones the third round, even though Reyes had the more significant strikes. I felt that the strikes were not effective because he'd expended so much energy in the first two rounds that there was no kind of sting on the shots, and then that's when Bones kind of kicked into a gear with the takedowns. Yes, he only landed 2 out of 8, but the fact is he was controlling with those takedowns, and even though Reyes went back up, he couldn't stop Bones taking him down. And I also gave it Bones because all the way through the fight, and I think the stats that I saw was it was 85% that Bones was going forward, that Bones was in control. He was at the centre of the octagon the majority of the time. So like I said, it's not, you can look at one facet of it and say that Reyes dominated in the significant strikes, but then there's the way you break it down, and I actually got a screenshot of someone who basically did a full breakdown of it. In the total fight, Reyes threw 263 shots. He landed 119, which is only 44%, where Bones threw 170 shots and landed 107. So he's only 12 shots short throughout the full fight, but he had a significant strike percentage of 62%. And like I said, he threw 8 attempts at takedowns and landed 2 of them. And Dominic Reyes took no shots, no attempts at takedown, and even going again through the significant strikes round for round, whilst Reyes threw the more shots and landed the more strikes in 1, 2, 3 of the rounds, his percentages are down on almost every single round. It's 62% to 38% in the first round, 48% to 59% in the second round. In the third round, he actually beat Bones by 2%, 57 to 55. But in the fourth and the fifth round, which it, for me, going into those rounds, seems to be, at least with Bones recently, the make or break rounds, the rounds where he kind of kicks into top gear. Bones landed 58% of his shots and Reyes landed 31%. And then in the last round, Bones landed 76% of his shots. He only missed 8 shots that he threw, and Reyes landed 45%. So Bones, he did what Bones does. He dominated the fight, even though it looked like he didn't dominate the fight, if you understand what I mean. So for me, I felt that it was a fair result. But I would fucking love to see that fight again, because that, for me, was an entertaining fight.
I don't think none of them lost that fight. I think it was a draw. Simple as that.
Again, going back to speaking with Jonathan throughout the show, he thought that it was a draw. He actually thought it was a draw.
The reason I think it was a draw is because, looking at when this fight was over, when they called it Bones, instantly I thought, bullshit, I want to see them scorecards. Because I didn't want to know who the judges were.
We'll get on to the scorecards in a minute.
Well, that's it. Well, I'm going to speak about them now. Well, the scorecards, it were just... I don't know what some of the judges were thinking, but the rounds where people were like on about where Reyes like dominated the first two, two of the judges give the second round to Bones, which
makes no sense.
Exactly, makes no sense. And then obviously the last one give the first two to Reyes, but then obviously the next ones is the first one he give the third round to Reyes and the last two to Bones, and then the second judge again who give the second round to Bones, he also give the next three to Bones, which people can say were out, but then right. The last judge, Chris Lee.
So that middle judge is the one who gave it 4-1 to Bond.
Yeah, 49-46.
He's also the same judge that gave, I mentioned at the beginning of the show about Ewell picking up the split decision. When that judge gave Ewell 3-0, and it was clearly not 3-0 at all, so that judge made some horrific decisions.
Oh, that's it. But then Chris Lee, the last judge, is the only one people can say we're actually watching this fight and scoring it properly. He gave the first two to Reyes and the last three to Bond. Yeah. Which the third round in that third round was probably the hardest one to score.
It was the pivotal round.
Yeah, well that were it. It were Bones were getting his Dominic came out with a perfect game plan. A lot of people let Bones start off with a pace. A lot of people just go up against Bones and go, actually, I'm going to take a step back because he's going to fucking hit me. Mm-hmm. As soon as Dominic went in there, what the first thing he did, he didn't even touch gloves, went in there and smacked him in chops.
Yeah.
And to show...
Had him on his arse in the first round.
Well, to show John Jones, listen, motherfucker, I'm here, I'm not scared of you, I'm going to fight you, I'm not going to fucking back away and let you take this pace. I'm going to show you fair, even though he might have been fucked. Dominic Reyes has never had experience of a 5-round fight before, mm-hmm. especially with someone who's elite level and, like everyone keeps on saying, the light heavyweight goat. So when you can go in there and put on a 5-round fight like that against Bones, it's a bit of a kick in teeth when you actually lose that fight. Fair enough, Bones takes the title away because that's the way a draw works.
Yeah.
That fight needs to be run back with them two. It's that third round meant everything. Reyes gave everything he could in them first two to show Bones that he was there, which, to be fair, it's not like he give it his all and like, oh fuck, I've made a mistake here. He's never had experience of a 25 minute fight, so it's 5 minute rounds, 3 rounds. That's his game plan. That's how he started off in the UFC. Go on in them first two rounds because he's only got one round left. Obviously, when in a 5-round, you've got to be a bit more efficient with your energy. Like, look at Bones, that's why he always
It's not only that, like you said, this is Dominic Reyes' first like kind of run at 5 rounds. This is Bones' 14th run at a 5-round fight. And as much as you can train in a gym to go five rounds, being in competition is a totally different animal. Yeah. And especially when you're being in competition against potentially the greatest fighter that's ever walked this planet, you are going to be fatigued going into those third, fourth and fifth rounds. And for Reyes, he was fatigued, and that's why I kind of gave the more gravitas to the pressure from Bones over the shots from Reyes, because he lost that power because he was tired, and it's because he went 25 minutes with the greatest fighter of all time.
Well, that's it. Well, you look at that fight as in you look at the way John Kavanagh, Conor training for the Khabib fight and for the Cowboy fight. When once a fighter's been out of the game and not been in one of them fights, same as Dominic Reyes, even though he's not been out of the game, he's still not been in a 25-minute fight. So when Conor were doing his training camp, John Kavanagh had everything, the octagon, the cameraman, the cutman, he had everything to make them 25-minute training regimes that he had with Conor whilst they were in their own gym. He tried to make it as realistic as possible so he can be in that atmosphere, because training 15 minutes and 25 minutes in the gym, is like you say, it is totally different from stepping into the octagon, looking at your opponent who's actually there, not to just light spar with your work on technique, who's actually there to fight you, with an audience of about 60,000 fucking watching you, all the eyes are on you. That's a lot of pressure you've got to take in, and you've got your coaches fucking shouting things, you've got Bones' coaches shouting things, you've got cameras everywhere watching you, you've got people taking photos, you've got people who's judging you. So it's, even though the fate's in your hands, in a way, leaving it up to the judges, it's never in your hands. That's why Matt Holloway never leave it to the judges. It's simple as that.
Yeah, and for me, the telling point is when it got to that fifth round, even if, as Reyes, as Conor was telling me, he was 3-1 up, even if you thought that, you will take this fight is going closer and closer to going to them judges. So you've got to do something to make sure either you seal it with the judges or you make sure you finish the fight before it gets to the judges. And when it got to that fifth round, Reyes didn't do that. Reyes kind of was like resting on the hopes that he'd won the first 3 rounds and was going to take it on points. And that's Bones kicked it up in that fifth round and really put his game onto Reyes. And as much as these judges go and like judge round for round, that can be kind of influential. If you have a strong finish, you can influence a judge to think
maybe that's
maybe he did better. Yeah. Did what happened in the earlier rounds not affect him as much as I thought? And that's what lost the fight for me for Reyes. If Reyes would have put on a lot more pressure in that fifth round, maybe it would have been a different story, and very likely it would have been, because if he'd have picked up that round, he's winning on two of the judges' cards. Obviously, the other one who was sniffing crack, he would have still give the fight to Bones. But yeah. But again, as much as I'm like shitting on Reyes for that game plan, he gave Bones one of the best tests he's ever had. I mean, I'd say Santos probably tested him more in the last fight, because that obviously went to split decision, and if it wasn't for Santos's knees basically buckling, maybe he could have finished Bones. But this to me is exciting, because we're getting people who are getting close to beating Bones. And we've always argued about Bones moving up because he's cleaned out this division, and whilst that's still true by beating Reyes here, the wins are coming more and more razor thin. And I think if Reyes did keep up that pressure, if Reyes did like train to go these rounds, or to go these five championship rounds, maybe we could get a new light heavyweight champion. I mean, Dana White in the post-fight press conference certainly thought that Reyes won the fight, and he said, I think that this guy is the future of the division. And do you know what? With the likes of him, with the likes of Santos, if he can stay fit, with the likes of Corey Anderson, we have got an exciting light heavyweight division there. And it's only going to take one of them to topple Bones for it to open that wide up.
Definitely. So Dominic Reyes, he played it very extreme. Now, Bones is one of them special characters in UFC, with the likes of Brock Lesnar and Conor McGregor. The UFC hang on their dick so much. You can't leave them. If that fight's going that way, you can't leave it to go to the judges, because it don't matter if you took the first three, Bones is going to win that fight. The judges are going to make sure that Bones wins that fight. So if you have took the first three, you need to still go out there and think, you haven't took the first three. You need to still go out there and think, he's beat me, he's took these first three rounds, I need to go out there and fucking finish him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a case of the judges are going to give it to the Bones particularly. I think it's more, you've got to prove you're beating the champ rather than being a razor-thin decision. The champ's always going to get kind of like that, kind of like a bit of a bias, if you understand what I mean. You've got to make it clear that you beat him, rather than if it's like a bit of a toss up, you're going to give it to the champ.
No, that's what I mean. He didn't knock him out, he didn't finish him. That's what he needs to do against Bones. If, like I say, because when it goes to these sort of decisions, the champion, like Bones, and people like Bones, where the UFC hang on their penis, is, They're going to win that fight. 9 times out of 10, the judges are giving it to them. So Dominic Reyes, his coaches should have, I wouldn't say they did all wrong, but should have told him to, like, not get too comfortable, like, even though he might be fucked.
Push it through that, yeah, just, at least in that last round.
Well, that's it, because he knows now, if he beat Jones, he would have had to fight him again anyway, because Bones would have got an instant rematch straight away. So he would have had to fight Bones twice anyway. And now he's lost, he's still going to have to fight Bones. So that's, for that 10 minutes where he sort of didn't do nothing, if he just pushed himself, just for that 10 minutes, like, what's 10 minutes when you're getting a championship at the end of it, when you're getting all that money at the end of it? It's fuck all, because you're only going to have to face him again to get that belt off him. Yeah. So it's, and with Bones, ah, fuck it. We'll go on to that next one when we're talking about segment.
So, for me, there's only two fights here that, like we mentioned earlier, Derek Lewis, that fight with Latifi is a nothing fight. He doesn't move up and down the rankings there. So it's not really going to be in any kind of like title position. But I do want to look at Valentina Shevchenko and Bones, obviously being champions, where they go next. And they're both kind of in the same position almost, more so Valentina Shevchenko. She's cleaned out her division. We were speaking before even the event started, and for me in that division, the people who are who were the people who you look to maybe beating her and not quite ready. And I think you're looking at the likes of Molly McCann, you're looking at the likes of Macy Barber, who, whilst have got massive potential, need some more fights to kind of like realise that. So for me, I think the only way to go with Shevchenko right now is super fights, is hopping between divisions. Now, I would love to see her take on the winner of Weili Zhang and Joanna, but she's also said that she wants the trilogy fight with Amanda Nunes. So for me, out of them three, they're the next kind of logical step for Valentina Shevchenko until some of those girls in this division can kind of like pick up a couple of victories, almost. Maybe even, they are very thin division, so maybe one really decent victory. I mean, we know that Macy Barber recently lost to Roxanne Modafferi, but if Macy Barber can put in a good performance in the next fight, that kind of erases that issue there. So yeah, I think for me, Valentina, in her future, it's got to be super fights.
That's it. Just I can't. Good luck to Sean Shelby. just for that women's flyweight and Shevchenko, like, who's next? Who does she slay next? Does she slay someone at that weight, or like you said, does she go for that super fight with the trilogy against Nunes? What happens there if she doesn't do that? Does Nunes get greedy and do trial weight cuts to get down and become the free time belt holder? I know, it's tough, but if you're going to end up fighting her for a trilogy, you might as well.
Get it down to flyweight. I mean, she walks around at, what, 150? She cuts down to get to 145 and then cuts down to get to 135. I think getting down to flyweight is a big ask.
It might be a big ask, but I think Amanda Nunes is that much of a gangster who she'd look at it that way, where she's going, if I wanted to fight for a third time, I want to go down as the best women's MMA fighter. And because let's face it, if she does do that, there's never going to be another women's champion who's going to hold three belts in the UFC.
I understand what you're saying, but for me, I think if that fight does happen, I think it's Valentina that goes up to bantamweight.
See, well, that's it for me though. It's like I was saying to you like the other week. I don't think we know that Shevchenko is the best at that weight. She's the best at that weight. But we know Amanda Nunes is the best at featherweight and bantamweight. So she's already beat Shevchenko at bantamweight, so there's no reason for Shevchenko to go there. We know that she's not the best fighter at that weight. That's not her weight class in the first place.
Yeah.
But Amanda Nunes, a lot of people are saying, who's the best fighter now? I still believe it's Amanda Nunes for what she's done and for what she's going to continue in doing. But in order for her to actually shut everybody up, she needs to go down, she needs to get that belt and go, right, yeah, she might have been the best at this weight, but I've already beat her at bantamweight, now I've gone down and beat her at her weight. Now I am the best women's mixed martial arts.
Your points make sense. I mean, to like cut to the chase, she's cleaned out two divisions. Yeah. There's nobody in the featherweight or bantamweight division you can look at and go, yeah, that's the clear next challenger. They're all either beating each other or they've all faced Amanda Nunes, and Amanda Nunes has absolutely mopped the floor of them. But for me, it's like, it's the cutting of that extra £30. I don't know if she'd be able to do it. If she'd be willing to do it, that would solidify her as not only the greatest female fighter of all time, but potentially the greatest fighter ever, to be able to cut between three different weights and be the champion in all three. Very brave, but yeah, the fact is, Valentina has got to face one of these two other champions.
Either her or it's either because I don't think the fight between, like I said, we already spoke about Joanna. I don't think she's going to win the fight against Weili. I think Joanna's already faced the facts that she's made her money, she's been the champion. That's it, she's lost it. She's, like I said, we've seen her recently, I'm not slated her. Like, she's done what she's needed for the sport. She's been the champion, she's built her name up, so she's now going around with hair extensions, makeup on and stuff like that. That's fair enough, so let her live that life she's living now. Like, she's coming back to get a title. Now, if she loses that fight, I don't think we see her again. And I think Weili who else is she gonna fight in that division? Bar from if Rosa Amanda Nunes comes back and says, "I want a title shot," she faces her. But if not, I'd like to.
Well, I know Nama Nunes has said she's ready to come back. We know that she kind of doesn't deal with the kind of pressure of the media very well. But you can't take away from Fuguro, she is an elite fighter in that division, but it's also another division that is very threadbare with talent.
Yeah.
I mean, Weili Zhang's what, had four fights in the UFC, and you could technically say she's cleaned out that division.
No, it's because she's beat all the top anyway.
Contenders. Yeah. So let's go on to Bones and Reyes. I think me and Carl are going to be probably agreeing here. I think that fight needs to happen again. I think Reyes did enough to obviously, on Twitter at least, put a lot of doubt in the victory with people who kind of have more experience and kind of know what they're looking for in the fights. He still did enough to say there's a modicum of doubt. I think they should run it again. I feel sorry for the likes of Corey Anderson, who's obviously been waiting in the wings to kind of get his shot, but this is the laugh of a title contender.
That just seals that fate now between Corey Anderson and Santos. When Santos is back, but I think Corey Anderson knows that's, don't matter what goes on in that rematch between Bowes and Reyes, he knows the next contender is Santos, and he knows now that he's going to have to fucking beat him to get the next title shot.
Well, that's if Santos is coming back in the near future. There's not a lot of word on him. Obviously, he had two blown out knees. Maybe we'd be looking at Smith versus Anderson for that kind of
even
waiting in the wings. But yeah, this fight has to run back. It's as simple and clear as that. And for me, it's kind of delaying Bones moving up, which we've been crying out for over a year now. But yeah, that fight has to run back. It's as simple as that.
See, well, that's it. It's like we were on about that. Like we're saying we've wanted him to move up, but now I don't mind him waiting to move up now, because something's actually happened to for him to have a reason
to stay there. Human.
But that's it. He looks beatable. Yeah. Reyes has made John look beatable, and that's in that fight. That's exactly what he did do. Now, like I say, we feel sorry for the likes of the other contenders, but they're going to have to go back to fight for the scraps again. The one thing I'm going to say about Bones is, the question is, is it a dangerous fight for Bones? Because we've seen, when Bones fights someone, and speaking about his elite level and making people pay for the mistakes and stuff like that, we've seen it against Gus, we've seen it against DC. Once he fights someone the first time, and gets to know you, gets to know your fighting, gets to know your speed, your power, your accuracy, your different abilities, what you can do and can't do, the second fight seems to go a lot more easier for Bones, because he already knows what you can do and he already knows what he needs to do to make you pay for what you're going to do in the first place. So does he run this fight back, and Dominic Reyes looks like he had a bit of luck in the first fight, and John makes him look like an average fighter? Or is Dominic Reyes still in his prime and still got enough time and power and the fight IQ and the right people around him to not bullshit him and tell him, yeah, you did do good, but you didn't do enough? In my opinion, he shouldn't need people around him now to basically say, you beat Bones. That's gone now, that was last night. He needs people now to say, you did enough, but you didn't win the fight.
Yeah.
So we need to work from now. We need to start again.
And that's the mark of quality fighters. When we've said it time and time again, if you can learn from these victories and come back a better fighter, Amanda Nunes is the perfect kind of role model. When she lost, we even had it in the quiz, Kat Zingano.
Yeah.
She came back, and look at her now, she's on a 10-fight win streak and she's looking unbeatable. And that is the game plan that Dominic Reyes could have.
Well,
he's fought the best fighter in the world, come out of it, learning a lot of lessons, almost beating the best fighter in the world, and he's still young and he's still hungry and he's got that potential to step up that game and be that best fighter in the world.
See, that was Dominic Reyes' problem in that fight, is he lost his stamina in the last couple of rounds. Now, he might be an athlete and he might be a fighter, but fitness comes down to it. Now, like I say, when I say go back and learn from what he did, he sort of put a whooping on Bones. He's shown Bones that, hang on a minute, your ego's getting a bit too out of hand. You need to go back and you need to learn on some stuff, because you, like, he even said it himself when John Marino Octagon, he basically said, you've got my respect, you're a lot better than I thought you were. You shouldn't ever think your opponent's a shit. You shouldn't overlook your opponent.
Exactly.
You should always be training like that opponent's going to be the one to beat you. Like, even though you're Bones and you know that someone's probably never going to beat you, look at it as this person's actually got a proper shot at beating you. Because last night, Dominic Reyes did look like he had a proper shot. Now, if he goes back and trains on his stamina and goes into the second fight and keeps up that pace from first round to the fourth round, even if he does tire in the fifth round, he'll do enough there to be the first person to beat Bones legitimately. Yep. Take that Matt Hughes, not Matt Hughes, what's he fucking called? Death one. That one who's Steve
Matt Hamill.
Yeah, Matt, I'll take that away, because that weren't really a defeat on Bones, but it'd be the first ever guy to actually beat Jones and take that title away from him.
Yep. There's definitely room for improvement there for Dominic Reyes, and he's obviously going to be down on himself because he's lost the biggest fight of his career, and he's also lost his unbeaten record. But he's got so much to learn from that fight,
definitely.
And he'll be a world champion. Simple as that.
The one thing he just doesn't need people telling him he won that fight and shit like that. He just needs to go back and just take it on the chin. Like he said in the Octagon, it is what it is. That's the game. You win it, you lose it. If you leave it to the judges, you know what's going to happen. Sometimes, most majority of the time, you get fucked, and that's exactly what happened to him. He lost the fight. He's to move on, work on his stamina, and he's literally got a legitimate shot at beating Bones.
Yeah, absolutely. So this event was the first in a long stretch of events for UFC. The beginning of the year we was kind of sparse. We only had like the Conor McGregor fight, and then me and Carl Sire had to fill a lot of content, but we won't be doing that for the next few weeks. I think the next break is in like the middle of April.
So
next week's card, UFC Fight Night 167. It's for a Fight Night card, it's stacked to fuck. We've got Nico Montano, the former bantamweight champion, she's fighting on the prelims against Macy Kearson. We've got Jim Miller on the prelims. John Dodson on the prelims, a really good looking fight as the feature prelim. Tim Means versus Dan Rodriguez. And then on the main card, we've got Lando Venata, who's so excited to watch. He's taking on Yancy Medeiros, which is a great fight. Montana De La Rosa taking on Mara Romero Barella. The co-main event, Diego Sanchez taking on Michelle Pereira. What a good fight that is for Pereira, if he can pick off Diego Sanchez. And then we've just spoke about him. Corey Anderson, the kind of guy lying in wait. He's taking on Jan Blachowicz, which, if Jan can pick up that victory, that puts him basically in Corey Anderson.
That's spot. Well, that's it. He checked it there. But like I said, the only reason I didn't bring that up is, like I said, when we spoke about it last time, I don't think fucking Blachowicz has got a shot in that fight.
Absolutely not. So, yeah, so tune in next week for that. But, yeah, this has been a really... I enjoyed the show. Carlos didn't seem to enjoy the show. And that kind of, like, it makes this podcast better, because we're not like both basically agreeing with each other, and it's good to have those like differences of opinion. But anyway, you can follow me on Twitter if you wish at DJ Kirby. You can follow Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos. You need to start following him, because I think he's only got about 12 followers. You can follow the show at Five Rounds Pod. Thank you for listening, guys, and that is the end.
Adios, amigos.
You are listening to the one and only Visionaries Wrestling Network, envisioning excellence and providing your perfect podcast experience.